real fast, and we'll get into section two. Best-selling information product topics. I brought a couple examples. Making money, obviously, doesn't really need that much explanation. Anytime you can show people a return on investment, that's a real simple sale for them. And information products on making money have been around for forever. You know, you look at 100 years back in mail order magazines, it's like how to make money with chicken coops. And then, you know, there's all kinds of stuff now. So making money doesn't need that much explanation. Financial or business-related information is always a great topic, too. Like options, stock market stuff, how to make money in real estate works every once in a while, I've heard. You know, there's all kinds of stuff in those two topics. And some other stuff that you may not always think about is how to make yourself better type information. So health information, fitness, self-improvement, relationships. I'm not allowed to name who it was, but a guy that I know just recently did a dating type home study, big product, did $1 million in 30 minutes, 1.3 million in 24 hours. So that stuff definitely sells. Big thing is focus on the cure, not prevention. I see a lot of people that screw up this a lot is they're trying to sell prevention. And it's a whole lot harder to sell prevention than it is a cure. Once someone has something, like the divorce example I gave you guys, you know, how to make your relationship better is okay, and it might sell, but how to stop your divorce sells really well because they're in pain and they need the cure and not the prevention. So think about that as you're creating the product. Hobbies, almost any kind of hobby will be a good info product or potential info product. And all going back to those marketplace characteristics, you know, parrot lovers, quilters, golfers. I mean, you know, it really runs the gamut. Travel stuff is another good information product. Travel entertainment and games. And I'll show you guys some cool examples. Occupational niches. So going to realtors, going to dentists, chiros, etc. And then how-to, pretty much any kind of how-to info. All right, so here's section two is info marketing concept. The reason you need a big idea, and I'm really focused on a big idea when it comes to developing my info products, because without a big idea, you know, there's just so much competition out there that your stuff just, you know, really doesn't make a dent in it. It doesn't have any bearing on the marketplace. And as my good friend Marlon Sanders says, too much freaking competition. So like I said, there's too many Me Too products, and this is a shortcut to a buying process is people really just look at a product, and it's almost like a split second decision a lot of times if they're gonna buy it or not buy it. And the big idea gives you a fighting chance. And it doesn't need to be new, it simply needs to be novel or just presented in a new way for people. And it's more about positioning and that immediate reaction like we talked about. So, you know, get the book Blink. And in there, Malcolm Gladwell talks about thin slicing, and that's really important here, is that people only, you know, they give you a second to think about what it is. So when you're presenting your info product to them in a way, even if it's on paper or on the computer, it's still that split second decision of, yeah, am I going to give you more attention and decide maybe am I going to buy it? So five ways, the big idea. And these are my best five ways that I've done stuff. And give them the fish is my number one way. And we'll talk about each of these in detail. Make your promise specific, go the opposite direction, move it to a new application, and being first. So let's talk about giving them the fish. Very, 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 very important. You know, Liz, maybe I'll get you to share some stuff on giving them the fish. But this is my first product, Instant Sales Letters, is a fish product because people are just downright lazy. Just cater to it. Yeah, you know, doesn't matter. People want, essentially, if you could show them a way, like Jeff is my personal trainer, actually, he's in the back there. If you could actually work, I told him many times, I'm like, I would just pay you. I wish if I could get thin and be in shape. If you worked out for me and just sent me a video of it. I wouldn't even want the video, actually. I don't even want to watch it. I just want to know that it's happening and I'm getting thin. What, Jeff?
You got to put it on your shelf.
Yeah, if I put it on my shelf, then I know it's there. But it, I'm serious, and I make a joke about it, but it's the truth. People are downright lazy, and it's just we're more time starved than ever. We're just, you know, don't have enough attention. So many things going on. I mean, if you have any kids, you know what, you know, all the activities that they're in. So the easier you can make it for people, the better. And so you guys have heard the saying, if you uh, if you feed him, if you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. That's complete bullshit. They want the fish. Give them the damn fish. So here's some real world examples. I mean, this is so ridiculous. And it's become just this mega bestseller. These Uncrustables for the laziest parents in the world. Take them out of the freezer, stick them in the kid's lunchbox, and by the lunch period, the thing's defrost. I mean, it's silly. But it works. It's great. I love them. I eat them. Here's my example, instant sales letter. So this is a little $40 product that's made me over $1 million. Only 2.5 minutes, you can quickly and easily create a sales letter guaranteed to sell your product or service without writing. And looking to increase your business, just fill in a few blanks and presto, you just create a powerful money-making sales letter. People like to fill in blanks. The more easy stuff you give them, the better. We'll talk about what I did with the doctors. We'll go into that later on. But one of the things I gave them were these pre-done patient attraction toolkits. So if they wanted more patients for liposuction, they had a CD-ROM for it. And all we did is they had the ads on there. They got postcards, they got press releases, everything that they needed, all pre-done. The more pre-done you can give them, the better.
I think we were at the underground members meeting that you had in Dallas, and I was going on about this research for niche marketing and looking for a way to do it a little different. And so we were talking about AdSense, and Yannick said, well, give them the fish. Well, I went to the best fish I knew, which was Public Domain Riches, Yannick and Michael's product, and Nichology, which is a membership site, and did a little S&D, search and duplicate, and took those and said, how can we make AdSense easier for people, specifically AdSense marketers who are already doing it? So I said, well, we could give them everything. So I did the research, the articles, the autoresponders, all the keywords you needed for Google arbitrage, and templates, graphics. You need it for AdSense marketing. Even I've got some cool traffic tools now, but that would be giving away the fish to you. So I give the fish to everyone, and that makes them really happy because they have the fish, and then they go give it to everyone else, and it works out really well.
But that was the whole idea that we were thinking about, and that was the questions that led her to create your product was, how can we give them everything that they need? And once again, your questions dictate the results. Public domain goldmine. That was. I think you were mentioning that with Liz. That was what it was with me and Michael Holland. We gave them the fish. We gave them 35 different public domain works on a silver platter, nearly everything done for them, ready to start making you money. We're talking about the market research, competitive analysis, keyword analysis, locating backend affiliate revenue sources, finding potential joint venture partners, clearing the copyrights. All for a tiny fraction of the time and money you would have to spend if you did it all yourself. So that was the idea behind that. Give them everything. And that's the fish. Make it specific. Specifics are critically important. And, you know, just vague general promises are, you know, just blah, 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 blah. But when you make something really specific, people pay attention. Some of you hopefully will know this. What's 99.25% pure?
99.44/100.
Thank you. 44/100.
You're on about 12 tapes saying it that way.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, yeah. So now I got it the right way.
And 99.44/100.
Excellent. That's ivory. So that is actually more memorable than 100% pure. And so a lot of times I get critiques back, and it's like, okay, I want to do something for work-at-home moms. And you know, okay, great. And so do a 500,000 other people. So what's going to make it specific? And so I go back and I'll tell them, okay, what about 233 ways to for work-at-home moms to make an extra $500 a month every month? You know, so the 233 is real specific, the niche is specific, and how to make an extra X amount is specific. So get specific for it. Here's a real-world example, 8-minute abs. Name says it all. You can just read the name and go buy it. And you can make a fortune with that. I mean, millions and millions of copies of this thing were sold. I love Ben Stiller, and there's something about Mary. He's like, I have a great business idea. 7-minute abs. here's another one. This is really specific. Very cool. 101 nights of great sex. There's actually a couple other things going on here, too, where there's a curiosity factor. Because if you've ever seen this in a bookstore, all the pages are completely closed. you can't open them. And they have these like really alluring titles to it. You know, for men only, like Suck the Mango or something like that, and you know, they have no clue what's in there, and you have to open it up to find out what's in there. And it's also an example of a tool, believe it or not, like given the fish product, because all the stuff in there is pre-done. It tells you, okay, get one canister of whipped cream, get 8 pieces of Saran wrap, get you know, it'll tell you everything you need for whatever the particular date is. And high premium price. This woman's pretty damn smart, let me tell you.
Does it give me the woman?
No, that's a different info product. So make it specific. This is my example, 33 days to online profits. When Jim Edwards and I were talking about it, we actually originally thought about 30 days to online profits. And I firmly believe, I don't think it wouldn't be as successful if it's 30 days. And so we made up 3 more days. But it's a day-by-day, step-by-step program. Here's this other slide that we missed. This is a real example of a specific, I don't know if it's in your books, yes, which way it is, but this is a great example, real world example of a 100 calorie snack pack. And it's very specific, exactly 100 calories. You know that if you eat 8 of them, you just had 800 calories. And so it's gone into a whole bunch of different varieties, like little Oreos, Ritz crackers, all kinds of stuff that's just filled with it. It's a great hook, and I know it's working because Coca-Cola just came out their little half cans, and they're exactly 100 calories. So it's pretty cool. All right, going the opposite direction. Earl Nightingale is one of my biggest mentors, and he said on a tape one time, if you don't have a good example to follow, just do the exact opposite of what everybody else is doing, because usually the majority is wrong. So, and that's a great way of creating a differentiation point. If everyone's low price, like Marlon is saying, then you become high priced. If everyone's selling red, you sell black stuff. You know, so you go the opposite direction. You definitely don't want to be the same, but you don't want to be, you know, just crazy different, like wear a neon shirt, dress up as Elvis's and go in a bright green Lotus just for the sake of being different. You know, there's got to be some differentiation point. Quick real world example, going the opposite direction, VW. Every other car maker is talking about bigger, 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 bigger. They went the exact opposite and went smaller. Ad Age named it the number one campaign of the 21st century or 20th century. Opposite direction, my own underground seminar is the exact opposite. I mean, there's probably more than one internet seminar out there. Yeah, can you believe it? And so, you know, everyone else has roughly the same thing going on, a lot of the same speakers, a lot of the same people you see. And so I decided I'm going to go the exact opposite direction. That was my big hook, is get these pretty much mostly unknown people really making an online world, and not the same usual suspects you see at other events. And that's been a huge winner for me. Move it to a new application. So take a hook from somewhere else and move it to another place. The drive-thru started at, I think, at banks, and then they went to McDonald's. Or the opposite, one of the two. So they moved them from one place to another when some smart person saw that and saw the convenience. So you can do the exact same thing. Timeshares, old application. New hook, NetJets, you know, a timeshare for jets. There's timeshare for yachts. There's timeshares now for luxury second homes, for exotic cars. So you can move it to a new application. Info product world, Magnetic Marketing by Dan Kennedy is a product of his that he's had for a long time. It's all about how to get business to come to you. My friend John Olivas took that and decided to make it how to get women to come to you. So it's womenapproachyou.com. And on page 129 is one of his ads that run. So you can see the whole hook is, you know, how this, you know, ugly balding guy gets all these hot women to come to him. And it's the exact same hook. It's just from a different place brought in to this new application. Being first is actually pretty important. It gives you marketplace positioning. I think of this one actually as the lowest tier of all the 5. But first gives you prominent positioning, lets you create your own first place position. You know, Club Med was the first one for all-inclusive vacations. Everything was sold separately before. They bundled it all together. That's me at Club Med last year playing volleyball. Look at that vertical, huh?
Yeah.
They need 2 guys to block me. Red Bull, you know, this was not anything crazy new, but it was just in a new novel way, really. And they did a lot of cool things. Like even the packaging is novel, where they went to an 8-ounce can with a little silver bullet type looking can instead of a big fat 12 ounce can. And which, by the way, is a great profit deal that they've done. They're selling you for more money, less liquid, which is pretty damn cool. Now there's tons of competitors. Here's a little quick quiz for you. If I name like a particular topic, I bet you can name the person because they were first online. How about AdWords? Perry Marshall. Affiliate marketing. Roslyn Gardner. Well, there are two sides of the coin, yeah. But affiliate, yeah, Declan, sure. So, you know, if they're first, they're going to be memorable. So that's something. And you're going to, if you pay attention, you're going to see the big idea everywhere. You know, just, and the thing that I really like about the big idea is it makes your sales copy, your whole offer, it makes everything easier for you. Once you come up with that big idea, it's literally like the sales copy almost writes itself. And if your product is struggling to sell, it's probably because you don't have a big enough hook or a big enough idea behind it. And it's time to revisit it or think about it at least for another time. All right, any questions on big ideas? Okay, mind mapping. Very, very, very powerful. This is one of my secret weapons that I use for info products, also for sales letters, but we don't have time to cover it on that. Page 135. I use it for product development. I use it for organization. I use it to see the big picture all in one place. Sometimes I also use it for collaborating with others so they can see what we're doing. Here's a quick example. This is my next product I'm coming out with. That'd be a clown for fun and profit. But I literally did this mind map in like 2 minutes without knowing anything about clowns, except that they're a little freaky. You know, this could be expanded a whole lot more, but you want to take your big concept, your main deal, put it in the middle, and then you have other branches that branch off out of there. So we have techniques for being a clown. You're a clown character. Choosing a clown name, tricks and fun, and then that expands even more to, I don't know, squirting flour. And I thought about maybe we'd have a DVD on how to create balloon animals, and then face painting, and then your Rolodex could be a bonus, and we'll talk about bonuses, but where do you get those floppy shoes? So suppliers, talent agencies, marketing for your clowning. Here's a bonus, copies of letters and postcards, which book gigs. So this is a tool, this is the fish, part of the fish that we're giving them. Contract points, birthday parties, corporate gigs, learning from the masters. It could be a bonus interview series with successful clowns. Literally in like 2 minutes, there's an info product right there. And it could be a pretty high-end info product for anyone that wants to be a clown and profit from it. I have no clue what that marketplace would be, but that's the great thing about the mind maps is it lets you get everything that's in your head or floating around in other places all into one place. Alan, you were telling me you use mind maps a lot.
Being an entrepreneur, I've always been very scattered. So years back, gosh, probably 20 years ago now, if not further back, I used to do, one of the things, you know, as an entrepreneur, and probably most people have to-do lists. So I'm an avid to-do list person, and I've never been able to figure out how to keep track of my to-dos and all that kind of stuff. It's always like a, you know, a learning process. But years ago, I went to a, when mind mapping wasn't even on the radar of anybody else's 20 plus years ago, I went to a seminar on how to do mind mapping, and it just made such sense to me because I don't think logically. I don't think, you know, from the top to the bottom. I get started and one idea spurs another idea, spurs another idea, and I just let, and it literally when I do it, I let everything come out, and it's the way I was taught to do it. Which comes up for me a lot is if I'm sitting here mind mapping, all of a sudden, you know, my thought is margarita. You know, it's like things come out, but if you just let it, whatever is there, flow out, then after you can use a software like, I think you use the same one I do, yeah, the MindJet or whatever, yeah, then you can go back through and just structure stuff, and it's such a great application. If you just let your mind just flow, you can come down with everything, then you structure it. It's an excellent application, and I've been using it for years.
Easier than linear outline, more in tune with how we think, just like what Alan talked about, because especially if you're like boop, 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 and everything, and then you go back and organize it later. I do a lot of stuff on paper first, and then I'll maybe go back into the software, especially if it's a project that's going to span a couple months, or if I'm collaborating with somebody else, then it's a lot easier.
It's something that when you get into the mind map process, if you really start doing it, it's something that you may want to test yourself, because I used to think it was always better if I did things in writing, and I've learned I write too slow, but I can peck a heck of a lot faster. So for me, it's easier for me if I do it on the computer, on the software first, and I also keep a voice recorder whenever I'm driving or whatever, because I get lost in my notes sometimes if I'm trying to write. I can't read my own writing sometimes. So figure out what works for you, and if it's typing, type it, but just, you know, stay focused in that.
Yeah, well, this is, so pictures, drawings, and colors, all those will help you retain information. So here's my cosmetic surgeon business. You can't really read it from here, but I have a bigger version for you here, page 139. And I'm not going to go over all the points with you, but we use different colors to signify what's going on or who's in charge of certain things, or like these are potential back ends, so they're in a different color. I think everything in orange was like stuff that we needed to get done and we haven't done yet. So this, you know, as you're collaborating with other people, this is a great way of seeing the whole big picture. And the more complicated the project is, the more you're going to need something like this. We talked about starting the central idea, then the key elements and details that get expanded outward and then can be revised later on. I don't recommend, you know, trying to make it perfect the first time, because then you start, there's two sides of your brain, so that then the little analytical anal part kicks in, and so you don't want that part. When you're just brainstorming this stuff, just get it all out there. And those are the two. Mind-map.com is Tony Buzan's site, who is supposedly the founder of this mind mapping. And then there's mindjet.com, which is the software. All right, so bonuses and offers. All this is all about formulating a very saleable product. And I spend a lot of time thinking about bonuses and offers. I don't think everyone spends enough time here, and they kind of give it as an afterthought of, okay, well, we need to throw in some bonuses. And that's not the case. You really want to formulate them from the beginning. I think about bonuses really shaping my entire deal. I got a little offer checklist for you guys. These are some stuff that'll give you some ideas when you're crafting your own offers to think about what can be done, what can't be done. You know, add other stuff to them. Use that as an offer checklist. My personal thought is bonuses have to be good enough to be on their own, essentially, to be able to sell. So you can't just buy, you know, get some crappy resale rights deal that you bought and use that as a bonus, with one exception. You can take a crappy resale rights product and use it as a bonus if you change the name or change it around so nobody knows what it is, the crappy bonus resale product that they have 18 times already on their computer. So you can change it around. Jim and I did that originally with 33 Days, is we took a couple bonuses and we repackaged it as something like the Turbo something package. I can't remember what it's called, but we just packaged them all together as exact same bonuses that some other people are giving away. I think your bonuses, if they're really super exciting, then it's gonna drive your sale. Just like one bullet point in your copy could drive the sale, one really exciting bonus can drive the sale. And what I always ask myself is, what do they really, really want? And that's what shapes my bonuses. So I told you about one of the fish products that I gave to the cosmetic surgeons was the pre-done patient attraction toolkits. That's what they really, really wanted. You know, they don't want to do any work. They just want to have this pre-done ad that gets some patients. So that was a bonus that drove actually a higher level. We had a basic and deluxe at that point, and that drove a deluxe sale. And we'll talk about all these later. Advanced tip is bonuses create the full picture of what the end result is to the customer. And so you need to figure out what's the end goal. So if it's, you know, to be in shape, the bonuses create that thing. So like going back to our mind map of our clown, you know, what do they want? They want a system they can easily plug into. So these are pre-done stuff as a bonus. This would be another component of the product. The DVD, so everything that would make it an entire system. I'll talk about later on is when to break up stuff, when to make it all one package, and that has some bearing on your product. Other thing is you can use fun bonuses like mouse pads or cups or whatever. People will surprisingly do a whole lot for the silly bonuses. Let's see. Here's I put a mind map. This is a written out mind map. It might be a little bit hard to read on page 143. Sorry about that. But you want to see the big thing that I want to show you here. So each bonus was created for a specific thing. Like, this is the public domain gold mine product, so they need traffic. So let's give them a bonus of some way of getting traffic. Let's give them a bonus of website templates. Let's give them a bonus of basically everything that they need to get the end result that we're talking about. Here's the fun little bonus. Here's one of the things that I've done for my copywriting course is we give people a personalized mug, which people absolutely love. They love personalized stuff. And I paid, like, this artist, I don't know, $250 or something to license this cartoon forever. And I had him make it for me. Very, very just a silly little thing, but people absolutely love it. It's just like the old Ad Age direct mail campaign that they used to have where you get the personalized cartoon, and that was the driving bonus to sell their magazine.
Something I picked up from Stephen Pierce one time, and I hadn't ever really thought about, you know, what goes into a bonus, because I really haven't been on the internet doing that stuff that long, but it really, really worked for us, and that is showing people, if you have a bonus and it says this product or this bonus is worth X or whatever, have it for sale on a site for whatever you say it is. Because I've actually bought created something and said, this site, you know, this bonus sells every day for $97 at.
And that's very good.
And you can buy a domain name for, $8, you write some copy real quick. It's up for sale, but if there's your proof that this book sells every day at, and people will sometimes buy the product because they want the bonus as much or more than they actually want the physical product. And it worked on our last launch that we did. We showed where the product was selling, that our bonus was already selling for $197, and we, put it up and sold it for that.
Yeah, that's something else with bonuses is people will write, like, ridiculous amounts of money on the value of the bonuses, and that just kills your credibility. I talk about this a lot in the copywriting course, but you can't do that. It's just silly. If you're selling an ebook for $19 and you get $5,000 in bonuses, I mean, your credibility is just completely out the window. And so people screw that up on the bonuses.
I do something similar to that, but at the same time, the actual website where the bonus is, I have it for sale, it is for sale. I mean, I've got the shopping cart connected to it. I mean, so people, I get orders from people going to
right.
the bonus. I don't
Excellent.
Know where the traffic comes from, but they do. And so it works out as a little income stream there.
Yeah, that's very cool.
I do the same thing, but with upsells. I'll have the upsell to be sold at full price, and I've found 60, 70, 80% of people taking the upsell just because they can see that it's discounted, but they can see what the real price is, and
Excellent.
It's actually for sale. So
cool, yeah, we'll talk about upsells later on, but that's a great tip too.
I just came back from a weekend, and it was very eye-opening. There's Kennedy Platinum member. What he does is he bonus people with, like, really, really high-end gifts.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, like, handmade stuff. And then what he does, he gets it from wholesale trade shows.
Right.
And these are the stuff that when you say basically this vase is like $300, it's like stuff that people see when they go into a high-end jewelry store. So when you say it's worth $300, there's no, this is crap because it's only worth like $5 or $10. It's not an info product. It's a physical thing. And his retention rate on his continuity program, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's like, most continuity programs have like a huge fall-off rate, and he just gifts them to death. And people just stay in there, presumably because they get this stuff. He'll mail them like leather jackets, like high-end handmade stuff. It's really nice.
Right. Yeah, and it all depends on your economics. If you got, obviously, a higher-priced product, you can afford to gift them nicer things. I mean, I love bonuses as info products because they don't cost us anything hardly, but we can set it up so it's really, really enticing for them. They want the super AdSense formula that made a friend of mine $18,000 in one day. So they want that little bonus report or whatever. And you can make them literally two-page reports, and people love them. It's all about titles, which we'll talk about next. So the titles really sell your info product. Another overlooked yet critical aspect of info marketing is your title. It has a major impact on your sales. Because once again, they're gonna, it's like this, a gut reaction. Instant sales letters, do I want that? This is a great product, and it's a great, they see it real fast, they get the idea real quickly, and they know what it is. Amazing formula, great title. Did you steal that from anywhere? No, I'm just kidding. Amazing formula is a great, great title. Marlon has some really good titles. Give me my money now. Is that what it is? What? So title, you know, spend some time thinking about titles. Titles are just like your headlines. They want to have some benefit to them. Who's got some really cool titles of their info products that they've used?
The new book that's here for you guys today is Write an Article a Day the Easy Way. So I think it's a pretty catchy title, and we've sold quite a few of those. So
yeah, that's pretty good. And Angela's been kind enough to give us a copy of that, right, for everyone. So you can do a title like the Chicken Soup blah blah blah, and we'll talk about how to leverage successful products too. And that's one of the things.
This is for a client of mine that I'm doing some marketing copywriting for. It was something you do a week that's absolutely killing your sex life, and that was something that it's been selling a lot.
You know, I pay very close attention to my titles, and, you know, 33 Days Online Profits, we talked about that. Instant Sales Letters, Get Fit While You Sit. Even something simple like for the public domain work, and I'll talk about that, Figure Drawing Secrets. So just something, it really matters, and the titles of your bonuses matter a lot too. If you're stuck, How To is always a great way to do it. You want to check out, also just to save your butt sometimes, check out trademarks at uspto.gov. Just make sure that you are okay with it. You know, you don't want to create rich dad, poor dad internet secrets or something like that and get a cease and desist from Kiyosaki or a lawsuit. All right, let's talk about some creation secrets. So how to get this stuff created quickly. And I always think about leverage. How can I do something one time, get paid over and over and over again if possible? And there's a trade-off, because sometimes, and we'll talk about high-end events or high-end coaching programs and things like that, where sometimes you are trading your time for dollars, but hopefully it's for a lot of dollars. So I think about, what am I already doing that I can simply leverage into a product? It's one of my friends, he was awesome with radio interviews. He could get radio interviews all the time. He had I think it was a speeding ticket. Yeah, it was a speeding ticket. Okay. And what he did was he created a how to get on radio product, and taking what he was doing already, he was calling up all these producers and he just recorded his pitch, you know, getting the from zero to how he got onto the show, and he recorded all of these things and turned it into a how to get radio publicity course, which I thought was very smart. He was already doing it and he just turned it around. What do I have on my computer already that I can leverage? We have a lot of stuff that we've probably already created that other people might be interested in that we can sell back to them. Can I do something for myself, then turn around and sell it? So do I want to learn how to get paid to bobsled or something like that? You know, so I go out and test it out, and then I can sell it to other people. You know, I always thought a great travel newsletter would work, where you get paid essentially to go sample all the stuff around the world, and it's got to have a specific niche. But I'll show you an example later on of a guy that's been doing this for 20 years. I know another guy, one of my customers in the UK, who had only a Caribbean newsletter travel site, or not site, but a newsletter, offline newsletter, and he sold that off. But he just got paid to go off to the Caribbean and write about it. So what can I do myself? Do people want to learn how to test new things on eBay? So I have to go out and test all this new stuff on eBay, and I can sell it back to them. So that's leverage. All right, so we'll get into some nitty-gritty of how to create the info product. We write it. Sit down and stick your butt on the chair and write it. Now, it's not as hard and daunting as it might seem, because you want to think about your product as being modular, especially nonfiction. Fiction is a whole different animal. We're not going to talk about that. But for information products, nonfiction, all of it can be very modular, especially when we showed you the mind maps. When we go out there and talk about each little specific point, if we extend it out to the point where each thing is a little module and we only write 500, 700 words on each one, all of a sudden we have a pretty darn big info product on it. Your outline is the key, or the mind map's the key. Or you can do a work for hire if you want to do a written work, and you can use services like Elance or Rent-A-Coder. Just a couple little caveats on that is I would always hire at least two people for any particular job from those places, because one person's going to be flaky or give you some crap, and then another person will be pretty good. If you can afford it, hire three people to do the same job. Let's see, I think I have page 150 is an example of an outline of a product that I did. And you can see here, it's very modular. So when I was sitting down to write it, I don't have to sit down and write all of it. I can just talk about you know, one particular thing. Actually, I never did this one. This was an outline of something that I was going to do. But you can see how it is pretty specific, and then all I have to do is write just a little bit on each particular topic, and it becomes pretty good. Speaking it, great way of creating info products, real easy. So some of us are better speaking than we are in written format. Do an interview. Have somebody interview you, transcribe it. You can interview somebody else, and we'll talk about a publisher's model where you don't have expertise of your own. Dictation, idictate.com. I think they've gone up now to like 1.25 cents or something per word, but it's still a great thing. It's actually done by real people, and they'll transcribe whatever you give them. Teleseminars. This is one of my favorite ways to create products. And inside your yellow manuals, by the way, when we start talking about all this product creation stuff, I gave you 200 pages of examples from A to Z of all kinds of different products. So number one is Public Domain Riches in the Telmar series. And you can see how I actually got people on board, like the content producers, how I got the experts on board on the teleseminar, how I sold the teleseminar, how we turned it into a product and sold it. So you can see all these different formats that we talk about, and I don't have time to go over every single example in here, but this is just a free gift for you guys, of 200 some pages of swipe file material. So teleseminar, one of my absolute favorite ways of creating info products. It's awesome because you get paid to create content. You can make it, you know, one-time teleseminar like that Public Domain Riches was. It was a one-time hour and a half teleseminar that I did with an attorney, and then two or three case study examples. And I've been selling that for a couple years now. So you can do it like that. You can do it as a series. I've done a series that has spanned a couple weeks. And, you know, the great thing is you get people to pay to be on the call or on the series. And then you go ahead and turn around and productize it. And we'll talk about that, my made up word, productizing. And then they pay for it that way. Let's talk about the publisher model. This is very cool. Somebody else is the content. So even if you do have expertise, sometimes you're going to have to go out and find other people that have expert status or have information. Or even if you have no expertise of your own, you can go out and just be essentially the publisher, be the marketing arm, be the distribution arm, and somebody else has the content. If you look on page 154, so this guy has a seven-figure publishing model. Those of you that are on Underground Secret Society members, you got this interview with Michael Lovitch. Seven figures, none of his own content whatsoever. He just sells these, all these different hypnosis programs. All bunch of different experts from, you know, all facets of, you know, how to stop smoking, to how to increase your productivity, to, you know, whatever, how to be better in sports, all across the board. And gets, you know, these Harvard professors who are experts at it to create these programs for him. But he's the publisher. He's just creating he's letting them create the content. He's just selling it. So what I gave you guys here, page 155, this was the recent Field & Stream magazine. Page 156 is this article, this guy who won the Bass whatever tournament twice. And I mean, if you wanted to be a publisher, I mean, you look around, you find these people. I mean, that would be a perfect spot. You go out and you tell him, look, I'm going to interview you, we're going to create an info product, and you're going to split the money a certain way. We'll talk about joint ventures in just a little bit. But you don't even have to have the expertise. That's why it's so cool, is the publisher's model. Live event, another way of getting paid to create product. A lot of you have figured out that this is a live event that will be turned into product. And you know, once again, all back to leverage, going doing the work one time, getting paid over and over again. It's the audio, or you can audio the event, you can video the event, you can do both. Product in a box is essentially what it turns out to be. And sometimes it can be way more lucrative than the actual event itself. So, you know, if you got two people to show up for your event and then you go ahead and record it anyway, you're going to make way more on the tapes. Hey, Andrew, can you talk about some audio-visual tips for people when they're recording events?
A lot of people get bogged down with, you know, the technical aspects, but, you know, as long as you're using a good three-chip camera, that's an audio. A lot of people neglect the audio. It's essential to have audience questions like we're doing with the handheld mic, because I've seen so many products where you can't really hear the speakers. You've probably seen them too. And, you know, that is why you're buying the product.
All right, we'll talk about productizing later on. I'll call on you again. Next thing here is creating a product real quickly, joint ventures. And I have a whole little section for you, a couple case studies. Joint ventures, you know, a lot of people create partnerships out of weaknesses instead of strengths. They think that they just want a buddy in business or something like that, and someone to bounce ideas off of and be fun to have, you know, my buddy, and we'll hang out. And that's not the way it works for most successful joint ventures and most successful partnerships. It works a lot better usually if they're bringing something to the table. Like, for instance, when I'm looking for partnerships, I want somebody who has a strength where I have a weakness in most cases. And it's something that they can bring to the table that I can't. So here's a couple quick joint venture case studies. One was Jim Edwards. It was literally like a very informal first partnership, like a handshake agreement. But here's some of the guidelines that we developed that will help you guys, I think, as you're creating more and more joint ventures. Which, by the way, a lot of people say JV and joint venture, and they're, you know, which to them means, well, I'll do an endorsement email for you. I think joint ventures are true working together on projects. So here's some of the guidelines that we developed. We jointly own the mail list. So either one of us can mail to it, but we have to get the other person's permission. If we're promoting, that list gets promoted one of Jim's products, my affiliate link is inserted in the mailing. If the other way around, it's his affiliate link. We kind of keep the agreement fluid because new situations can come up. Like, for instance, we were doing a lot of customer service that my company was handling, and I'm like, yeah, you know, this is a little bit unfair. I think we need to get a higher percentage because we're handling all these annoying customers and these little inquiries and you know, all the different things that go around with running the business. So you know, we agreed and we bumped up the percentage. Case study number two, public domain gold mine. I actually actively went out and sought out Michael Holland because he was an expert in niche marketing and niche researching. And I checked him out first, made sure that he was legit, made sure that he really knew what he was talking about and that he had a good reputation. And his strength with his niche marketing, with the, you know, the research, the spreadsheets, and all this other stuff. And we just have a real simple written agreement. It's literally one page. Yannick is responsible for this. Michael is responsible for this. We'll split the money this way. And that's it. It's very, very, very simple, straightforward. I really believe in keeping things simple. By the way, I'm not an attorney. Don't play one on TV. So I'm not giving you any legal advice here, but just a real simple, even an email outlining what you're going to do, what the other person's going to do. Case study number three is a different way. This is the more patients. This is the revamp of my cosmetic surgeon business. And formed a new corporation. I'm in charge of the marketing, and Larry Brown's in charge of operations. So that's the way we've divided up the duties. And, you know, you can do it all a number of different ways. And, you know, that's just something I've had no interest in doing. You know, I think we hired one employee maybe, or it was a part-time thing for that deal. I have no interest in whatsoever in supervising any employees. So he's in charge of all operations, and I just do marketing. So there's a lot of ways of doing the joint ventures. Here's a couple keys that I found. Open communication. You're going to find, you know, if one person might become resentful because they might be doing too much work, and if you don't have this open communication going between your partners, then someone's going to get even more resentful, and then things are going to sour really quickly. I see kind of a swing of responsibilities. It's not always 50-50. Some person might be doing 60% at one point, but if it's fair, then that swing of responsibilities go back and forth so that one person is not getting resentful. Get it in writing, like I talked about. You want to know administrative functions. Those are important. Who's handling refunds? Who's handling customer service? Who's handling the money? Keeping greed in check. Sometimes these joint ventures can get really big, really fast. And if you don't keep your greed in check, you're writing off five-figure checks to a partner, and you're like, bastard, you didn't do anything. Why am I sending him this check? And you can get really, that's where the resent starts kicking in too. So think about that. Everyone wants to know how to split up the money. Yep, hold on. Jeff.
Yeah, one other point on joint ventures that a lot of people don't think about. When we're getting into them, we're thinking about the next couple of months and, you know, who's going to do what and write the sales letter and all that kind of stuff. An important part to think about if you're planning a joint venture that's going to have some legs that could really grow into something is the exit strategy. it's, you know, it's likely some partner might want to sell out. So you should plan that ahead, and there's lots of different terms and conditions that you can put around that, and you don't have to go nuts and get a 20-page document, but that can be a real sticking point. If one guy wants to get out of the business and the other one can't, one guy gets hurt, who's taking up the slack, and how does that get spread out? So it doesn't need to be done for a small thing, but if you're looking at a 6- or 7-figure potential business down the road, it's definitely something to think about.
That's a great point. One of the things I've included in some of my agreements, I have no idea what the hell it's called, but it's like, if you split the pie, I get to choose which piece I want. And so it's, the person can make you an offer. So let's say it's just two partners. The partner can offer me what they think is fair to buy the business, and I can either say yes, or I can turn around for that exact same amount and buy the business. So that some way of making it a little bit more equitable. Splitting up the money, you don't have to default to 50-50. You know, don't feel like just because you got a partner that it's automatically 50-50. It's not always the case. It depends on what you're bringing to the table. And so, like with some of my partners, I have a bigger list, so I'm going to get a bigger percentage. And one of the kind of cleaner ways that I've done the bigger percentage is that I say, okay, my customers, I will sell them as my own affiliate, and I get the affiliate percentage. So on top of the split, I get the affiliate commission. So it makes it fairer for the person. They get to sell also via their affiliate link, and so proportionately, my share would be bigger. Sweat equity could be 50-50. I've had people come in and they're like, I'm going to do everything, and then we're just going to split it 50-50, and I that's fine with me too, because I wouldn't have had anything going. Like, my philosophy is 100% of nothing is still nothing. All right, so I'd rather have more things going on where I'm getting a percentage. And that's, anyway, those are my thoughts on joint ventures. Choosing your partner is really important stuff. Your reputation is going to be directly or indirectly affected by whatever your partner does, says, hangs out with, whatever goes on. So it's really important. And it's also important of a careful selection of who you endorse, the products you endorse. We'll talk about the Godfather position later on. Dan Kennedy has a really cool partner test that I like, and you ask your partner, will you give me 3 names of people that have done business with you in the past and would gladly do business with you again? And if they can't come up with 3 names, then, why do you think that you're going to be the first person that's going to not get screwed by this person? And then the other thing that I look at is, do they do what they say they're going to do? I mean, that's really important. They can, yap about stuff really easily, but when it comes down to it, do they actually get the stuff done? Is it in on the deadline that we set? So, and those are also my criteria for if I'm going to do another joint venture with you in the future. Okay, back to some creation tips. We can license the product. Careful about what you license. We talked about that. There's a lot of crappy licenses out there. If you're licensing stuff, you want to be really just cognizant of how many other copies of this are out there, or sometimes it doesn't matter because you might be selling it as a back end to your customers, and who cares? It's completely inside our little force field that we created around our oil well. So it doesn't matter then if you're licensing products as a back end, because you're not going out there and using it as a front end. But if you're using a licensed product as a front end, there's a lot more careful considerations that go into it of how much, just how widely spread is this product? How much leeway do I have that I can change things around, change the title, do different things to make it unique? So otherwise, if I'm one of 50 people selling a particular thing online, the exact same thing, it's a lot harder to do all the stuff that we're going to talk about, like get affiliates and so on, than if you have your own unique product. I like to use licensed products a lot for back-end stuff. I use them for bonuses a lot of times when nobody knows. They're in my funnel already in a way, and so I've used them for bonuses. I've created almost complete products out of licensed stuff. Missy's, and we'll talk about that, instantthankyouletters.com, a lot of that is licensed material. Pre-publication, this is a cool way of creating a product really quickly, and that is, all right, once again, not an attorney, but what I've done before is sometimes I will take money and let them know, hey, this product is coming out in 30 days and now you can get it for a discounted price. And that gives me some incentive, it lights a little fire under my butt to create the product. It's also, I know in 30 days I better deliver this thing or I'm going to get a lot of angry people. I've also done it where I've sold it and I told them it's going to be delivered in X amount of time but never charged them. On the third sales letter, third report that went out with the deadline on it, on the last day it was like through the fax machine. I'm like, yeah, $900. And I'm like, oh crap, I got to write this thing. So after that euphoria, you know, went away, then I realized I had to work. So out came the letter. Dear Dr. So-and-so, thank you for your order. We're in the process of republishing how to get more cosmetic cases, and it'll be delivered within 30 days. Your card will not be charged until that point. So it was a good way of testing the marketplace to see if anyone bought. So you can do it like that. Here's a little email on page 167 of when I came out with this fax manual. This is one of my follow-up products. It's since been removed from the marketplace because of the fax laws have changed so much. So 167 is we gave people a discount and letting them know that they can get it. Now, page 170 is on the sales letter. You can see I talked about this is a special pre-publication offer. 173 was actually the first internet seminar I ever spoke at, and I had no product to sell, but I figured I probably should have some product to sell, and all I did was wrote up a little order form and figured, what the heck, maybe some people will buy this thing that I'll come up with, and this is all based on what I was doing with my online business. And so I, you know, fair disclosure here, I told them it was pre-publication and what the price is going to be. So you can see that the front and back of that. You know, once again, just a real quick, just legal thing on it. As I understand it, and I'm not an attorney, but as I understand it, if you accept money from someone, you have to deliver the product within 30 days. There's other stipulations that you can, you know, have to like mail them notice if it's going to be beyond 30 days, regular mail, and so on. But for me, if I'm doing pre-publication, I would much rather have the credit cards and checks and whatever just sitting there and not charge people until the product's actually done. And that lights a fire under me too. So you see that and you're like, oh shoot, I can have all this money if I get the product done. Now, there's nothing wrong with delivering your product in pieces too to people, as long as you're telling them and keeping them updated on stuff, and you know, they'll be happy by getting this and then a week later getting something else. So get it to them. Also, a half done product sitting on your computer is not going to make you any money, which is why actually this fax manual that I did, I had it like three quarters of the way done, and I'm like, ah, screw it, let me just see if I can sell it, and then that'll motivate me. And that's what I did, is I just wrote up a little quick sales letter for it and sent out the email to my list and got them to buy it. And then I'm like, all right, well, now I got to finish it up and get it ready for sale. User-generated content, very, very cool way of creating products that not many people really think about. If you go back and think about big picture, American Idol is total user-generated content, right? They have all these people vying to be the next American Idol. They have all these dumb shows that are coming out now that are ripoffs of American Idol. I wondered why it took so long. Have you seen ads for those? Like, it's just really silly. It's like a gong show type thing with the three X's and America's most talented. Yeah, there's something else too that they just came out with. All these are user-generated content. All these people are there and they're performing, and then we're paying with our time, paying with sometimes via text messaging, voting for the next American Idol. You know, they're selling ad space. It's all user-generated content. America's Funniest Home Videos, total user-generated content. Send in your funniest videos, we'll air them. And here's a really cool example on page, you'll like this, Nathan, page 175. And yeah, you could totally do this with your marketplace. But these are videos. Sorry, this is actually a bad copy. But what happened, these guys are selling all these speed videos of this guy in Japan who likes to go 200 miles an hour on regular highways. And he'll send in videos. And they just sell the videos of it's user-generated content. They're sending in content. A while back, they had some backyard wrestling videos that did really well. People just sent in videos of themselves beating each other up in their backyards, and it's just a perfect closed loop. You go back and the people who are submitting the content, you sell it right back to them. It's awesome. User-generated content is the exact same thing for forums. You know, if you compiled your forum postings into a product, that would be all user-generated content. All right, public domain. Has anyone done anything with user-generated content, by the way?
What we did with massage therapists was we had them send in their various marketing pieces. And what I did was I told them that whoever sent in a piece would get a free copy of the completed product. So we had about 50, right around 50 therapists send in a marketing piece. I gave them each a free copy. We compiled it into one big resource and sell it for $149.
Awesome. Awesome. That's a perfect example.
Yannick, one of the activities that we do are have recorded mastermind sessions where we're not really, you know, the deal. It's the entire team is the deal. So that's user-generated content. And so are forums, really. Anyone who has a forum, it's really user-generated content.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just thought of one that's sitting on my computer as we were discussing this. We tell a seminar on how to create interest-creating opening statements for telephone calls. And a bonus is I offer to critique their opening after they go through the program, and I just give them my comments on email, and I have all these sitting on my computer right now, so I'm going to compile these and put them into either a product or a bonus.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've used, when I give out website critiques, like with this, the copywriting course I sell, I give out website critiques, and of course, I'm all about leverage most of the time, so I take those critiques that are in PDF, and I give them out as bonuses for stuff. I use them for a secret society newsletter that people get them every month. They're really good critiques, actually, and they're helpful for people to see, just like they're helpful when they see other stuff.
Where's the mic? We do something very similar, Paulie. In our Platinum program, we have, you know, several two-day meetings. The first couple meetings, we were carrying the rock, and it was just too hard to work. But now we're slowly getting to the point where they're doing, like the attendees are doing by 50% of their presentation. And when we do a hot seat, we let the others give the feedback as well. So we just kind of like what Dan does. He facilitates the thing rather than create the content. So.
Absolutely. Oh, wait, up here first. That'd be easier.
Yeah, my first info product was actually user-created. What it was a list of skip trace departments, which are the inside phone numbers at companies that will pretty much tell you everything on somebody's credit report, you know, any kind of information about them you want to know. And it had been used in one industry, and I simply took that list and took it to another industry. And the way I got the list compiled was simply I went to all the skip tracers I knew and I said, give me your list, because everybody had their little black book, and I'll give you a free copy of the of the end product.
Excellent, yes.
And every year it was a nice continuity because every year we had to update it.
Excellent. That's a great example.
I'm out to other photographers asking for their best sales letter, combining those together in a product to give to all of those people to then sell to other people and then give all those photographers an affiliate link and then build my list up from that.
There you go. Very good. Is there another one? Okay.
I mentioned I had recently purchased a TVandRadioJobs.com website, and one of the most difficult things when you're looking to switch jobs is to get your demo tape or demo reel in the hands of the actual decision maker. It can become a major challenge. So what I did is I gathered information of the most creative ways for current broadcasters to get those demo tapes in the hands of the PDs or general managers, and I got ideas of, like, you know, things such as put it in a shoebox with slogans in it, you know, we'll stomp out the competition, or in a pizza box, and just a whole bunch of creative things. But I haven't sold it or anything. It's really going to be this site's converting to a membership site, so mm-hmm. that'll be one of the bonuses that you talk about that actually has value.
Yeah, that's very good. I mean, all this stuff that I'm sharing with you could all be used as bonuses. I'm going to give you a slide that really is great for, like, expanding your mind on what you can create, put into a product, because, you know, the quicker we can create a bonus that really makes a lot of sense, it gets people really excited. Like, Todd just left, but I bet the massage therapists are all excited to see the other winning pieces from the other massage therapists. All right, I'm going to cover public domain, and then we're going to go to lunch. Public domain, there's a couple myths on public domain, and public domain is one of my favorite ways of getting content too, and using it a bunch of different ways, but a couple real quick myths. Everything online is public domain. False. without a copyright notice. It's public domain. That's false. I believe it was after 1989. You didn't even have to put a copyright notice on whatever material you put out there. Out of print does not mean public domain. So what exactly is public domain? And comes into four categories: ideas, facts, names, titles, blank forms. All those are non-copyrightable. Works granted or donated to the public, people will actually do that. Like P.T. Barnum, his autobiography, he donated to the public. A lot of times software developers will do this. Propeller heads love to do this. Well, they make stuff available as open source. Government works, all federal, put a little asterisk over all because you have to take a look at it because sometimes it might be developed by a private company and they own the copyright to it. But for the most part, all federal, some state. Huge number of works. Formerly copyrighted works, and this is where I spend a lot of time, where their copyrights have expired or they've been lost for some particular reason. And here's a quick little cheat sheet. It's in your notes. Before 1923, anything published here in the U.S. is copyright free. So that's your free date. 23 to 63. If it wasn't renewed in its 28th year is public domain. So that means if something was copyrighted in 1950, wasn't renewed in 1978, you're free to use it. And we'll talk about the ways you can use public domain just a little bit. And people estimate that it's 85% of all written material from that time period was not renewed. So it's just a plethora of stuff. The other stuff you don't really need to know about. So finding public domain, book searches, and I'll show you what I do, Alibris, addall.com/use, online collections, gutenberg.org, government sites, firstgov.gov, pueblo.gsa.gov. This is a new one, google.com/ig/usgov. It's like a search engine of just government works. It's pretty cool. Libraries, used bookstores is where I found stuff. This is an online, this is a little Camtasia, but so this is the main site that I use a lot is Alibris. A lot of I'm doing some searching. And so we'll do on advanced search, we'll go to books. This is what that copyright site looks like at UPenn. Here's a couple cool examples. And then I'll talk about what you can do with it. This is Rebecca Fine, my friend Rebecca Fine. She took a book from 1910 called Science of Getting Rich, and she created this high profit six-figure business based around it. The cool thing about this, well, a bunch of cool things. One, she got this book, it really just blew her mind away, and so she started giving it away for free to a couple friends, and then people kept asking her for this book, and finally she's like, I'm sick of this, I'm putting this up on my website for free. And then people started downloading it, and she's like, well, maybe I should make some money off of it. And she just took a microphone and recorded the book in her own voice as an audio, and that made it her own because you own the copyrights then to that particular version because it's you. I don't know if you changed anything or didn't change anything. If you don't change anything, you still own the copyright. So then she went on and created these, I think they're e-classes based around all these principles. And she did something pretty neat where it's like name your own price. So she had people paying anywhere from a couple dollars from Eastern European countries to some guy paid a couple $1,000. And interesting, several competitors go to Amazon, look up Science of Getting Rich. There's probably like five or four people right now selling it on Amazon. Public domain, it doesn't go out of public domain. So I can use it, you can use it, anyone else can use it. It never goes out of public domain, but you can create what are called derivative works, where then you own the actual piece. And this is a good example of derivative work. My friend Matt Fury found this wrestling manual from like 1915. Really cool wrestling manual on catch wrestling, which I have no idea what the hell that is. And it was divided up into little sections. It was a home study course originally, way back in 1911 or 1915. And what he did is the first thing he did was he just, to his list, he Xerox copied the book and wrote a good sales letter for it and sold it for $50. Xerox copies of this exact same thing, sold it for $50. He's like, okay, well, there's a marketplace for it, interesting. Then he took video on every one of the little home study components, and now he sells it for $5.99 for the whole video set. And he makes six figures just from this one particular deal. So that's a derivative work. You can take a public domain material and use that as a basis for derivative work. Instant sales letters is not public domain. The upsell that we use is public domain. One of the books called How to Write Letters That Win. And it's also, the other part of that, the upsell is called, I forgot what it was, like 559 business letters or something in agreements. That was licensed. So it's basically free content. And 66% of people go for it, 300, 400 people every month. So it's extra $15 in my pocket. Web Copy Secrets was, and I'll show you the example of the copy on it. We use the public domain work as the bribe to get people to pay for the teleseminar, where I got people so excited about this public domain work that it took me 9 months to find. So you can use it in a lot of different ways. This is an example of a product I took from scratch, you know, A to Z, and just put it up there because I literally, you know, had people, you know, saying, well, this is all crap, you know, I can't take public domain work and make any money off of it. I took, found a book in a used bookstore called Anatomy Drawing, and a guy named Victor Perard. Really interesting book. I should have brought it. All it had in there is illustrations of people. It's a figure drawing book teaching artists how to draw people. And it'd be like, you know, illustration of the hand, an illustration of the foot, illustrations of the head, of the torso, of all kinds of parts of the body. And so I thought, you know, this might be an interesting experiment. I wouldn't normally choose this marketplace because artists, as we know, are starving artists. Yeah. So I thought, well, what the hell? Let's just see if this works, and then we can make it a case study. And so what I did was, you know, all the steps that we talked about earlier. I did that spreadsheet to see if there was any potential for the marketplace. I did an affiliate sale. I went to Amazon and signed up as an affiliate with the most recent figure drawing book. I started driving people from Google AdWords. It was at that time you didn't need a landing page. Now you just need a landing page, and then you could drive them off to an affiliate site. So we made a sale or two or a couple sales from that. So that was good. We're getting a lot of clicks. That was good on Google. I also started, you know, paying attention to the message boards for artists and finding out how they talk and just researching all this stuff. That's not a copywriting seminar, but all this stuff was research and found out from where they were. Like, their biggest problem was that they needed a model to sit for them so they could draw people. And some of the other stuff, like, this is all from message forums, all this copy about talking about how you can tell right away if some artist doesn't know anything about figure drawing. So very, very simple sales letter. And we put it up, and we got zero sales. I'm like, damn it. And then I changed one thing in the Google AdWords, and I'll show you later on, but all we did is we changed, you can control the flow of your ads, and we changed, made it $14.95 on the ad, so we constricted people, because obviously it made a lot of sense, as starving artists, a lot of tire kickers. And this makes like, I don't know, $400 every single month. I pay absolutely no attention to it. It's like, we built up a list of like 8,000 or 9,000 artists that I have one little thing that I send to them as part of an autoresponder sequence. So if I actually paid attention to it, it could be a couple $1,000s a month if I wanted.
Did you build that entire list of 8,000 or 9,000 people using pay-per-click ads?
No, I have some affiliates now. So that's it. I still run pay-per-click. I run pay-per-click, and we have a couple affiliates, and that's it.
Okay, but the initial base was done using pay-per-click?
Yeah, all pay-per-click. Actually, I put the whole sales letter in there for you on page 189, so you can see how simple of a sales letter it is. Here's another cool example. It's just one of my students this is a guy and selling crochet stuff. So he knows basically nothing about crochet, but he took works out of the public domain and sold it. Here's another example of a work that I took out of the public domain, page 195 in your manual, which is a houseplant. It's answers to almost any houseplant question. It's like 1001 houseplant answers or something like that. I can't remember. 1001 answers to houseplant questions is the name of the book. So another just little tiny goofy marketplace that, you know, just makes me a couple $100 and just rolls along by itself. I call these little simple, silly sites. So with the info business, you can really, you know, you can do it small as a part-time gig, you know, give it to the the family member that you're supporting and tell them about this. Or you can do it big in a big way, and we'll talk about that after lunch, some of the really big ways you can blow this out. I don't think I have anything else on public domain on here.